Well, it's Thursday, which means it's the Gab and Jules show. Hello, Jules.
Hi, Gab.
All right, we got a lot. This thing with the games coming every day, it just means there's storylines everywhere this week. Obviously, Barcelona and Atletico Madrid, yeah. The big one. But you know what? That was on Tuesday night, which feels like ages ago. So we're gonna try to look forward. We're gonna talk about that. We're going to talk about our favorite Norwegian, maybe second favorite Norwegian.
Maybe second.
Jan Agefjordtoft will be coming on because on Saturday, it's the big German Cup final. Yeah. My man, Peter Boss, taking on the mighty Bavarian Football Works. And we're going to start with Manchester United because, well, here's the thing. It's not that they beat Brighton. It's that actually, they look good.
Mm.
Pogba and Bruno together.
Yeah.
Looks good. And then you've got, you know, the speedsters up front. And I get the sense of fragility and can it last, but they're right there. They're neck and neck with Wolves in fifth place.
You're right. I think it's looking very good for them. Unbeaten in 59 all competition, if you know, before the pandemic and after the pandemic. It feels like they found the right formula in terms of balancing the team, and that 4-2-3-1 works really well. Defensively, I think they're still quite solid. I think you can get an upgrade on Lindelof, no problem, and they might sign a better centre-back in the summer. You might get an upgrade on Luke Shaw, left-back. You've got Brandon Williams, but again, this is maybe a position that you could look at in the summer. But the other positions, I mean, even Matic seems to like be reborn. I mean, that obviously that pass on the third goal is absolutely fantastic, but in terms of what he just has to do, and again, it was Brighton, so he might be different in tougher games against better players, but I thought he was so disciplined. I thought he covered very well Pogba. He was just that screen in front of the back four, just a pure holding midfielder role where you get the ball and you pass it to the ones who can create, and then we get down to Bruno and Pogba, who can create so much. And I think the difference for me with Pogba is that why is he so happy and why is he even thinking about staying? It's because suddenly the burden of being the creative player, the creative touch, is not just on him. You've got Bruno Fernandes who can do that. You've got Marcus Rashford who can do that. You've got your two fullbacks, and we saw Wan-Bissaka.
You're going to sell me on Wan-Bissaka and Luke Shaw as the taking their part of the creative burden?
No, but, okay, but listen to me. They will never be able to cross the ball, well, especially Wan-Bissaka, like Carvajal or Dani Alves. However, just by taking a position quite high on the pitch, you become another option, even if they don't give you the ball. And you know, Wan-Bissaka was not really involved in any of the goals, but just him being quite high on the pitch for the opposition, this is someone you need to keep an eye on. And then that creates more space for other players. I just think that right now, and it might not last, and they will have tougher games than the Sheffield United one, where they, you know, they went down to 10 men, the Brighton game. But I think there's something there growing, clearly. And then you look at Mason Greenwood, and I think the kid is 18, and he plays with so much freedom. It's quite remarkable.
Okay, but the revival predates the return of Paul Pogba. Now, you want to big up Paul Pogba, your boy, and I love Paul as well, but it was 15 games, and the revival kind of started before he came back.
Yeah.
And obviously you got a Bruno Fernandes lift there, I think, pretty evidently. Somebody wrote today that he's the most transformative signing that United have had since Eric Cantona, which, I don't know. I haven't gone back through all their signings.
But,
but you know, he certainly had
a big boost.
What I wonder about, though, is when you talk about those attacking players, that front three, can you sustain the midfield of Pogba, Fernandes, and the front three against a certain quality of opposition? That's one question I think that they certainly want to address this summer. And the other question is, okay, Rashford, I can see how he gets better. But, you know, Martial by this stage is in mid-career, right? Have we
he's
seen...
24.
He's 24, yeah. I mean, what's he going to do, play until he's 50, right? But I'm saying he's not a kid.
Yeah, but it's not like if he was 31. Like,
does he have another level? Is he going to become the player that we, you know, when they signed him for that enormous amount of money? Is he on that trajectory or no? Probably not. Probably this is what he is, right?
Yeah, but if he gets you 25 goals a season, he's on 19 now or 20, I think. Like, so you would go and sign a better striker. I mean, as Solskjaer this week said, you know, they don't have the divine, I don't know how you put it, divine right to start, or believe that they will start every game, Rashford and Martial. So you go out and you sign a better striker.
I think you have to sign another striker or another front man in the summer, whichever way you want to choose it, right? Because obviously Rashford can play center forward. He can also play on the wing. It depends how you want to use him. I like the idea of having also different options. I think the way Bruno Fernandes plays, I don't think it's written in stone that you have to play with wingers. If they end up with more attacking fullbacks somehow, I think you can easily switch to a dime. You might want to switch to a diamond, perhaps, if you get the right players there,
definitely.
But which I think would actually probably benefit Pogba even more. But obviously you're talking about overhauling.
But in those big games you were mentioning earlier, that could be an option.
But this is, again, this is also the week in which, you know, it was reported that, well, yeah, they'd be interested in Sancho, but they couldn't spend more than 50 mil, or they wouldn't.
Yeah, but come on. We know that's not true.
Well, if you did get Sancho, hypothetically, what would it look like?
You play Sancho for Greenwood. So you keep the 4-2-3-1. You play. I mean, again, Sancho fits that versatility that you were mentioning. You can play in a 3-4-3 with Sancho as a right winger. You can play in a 4-3-3 with Sancho as a right winger. You could do many things tactically if you've got Sancho. I just think that what Sancho will bring you on top of everything is the ability to have even another sort of plan, in the sense that you're very good counter-attacking, as we saw on the third goal against Brighton. You can have the ball a lot and the possession because you've got Pogba and Bruno in your team, and they're enough to control a game and the tempo.
You are comfortable in some possession at that point. Yeah, no, I'll give you that.
And then if you've got
Sancho, you have Maguire who can pass a little bit out of the back.
And if you've got Sancho in the games that you're maybe not as good, or you're struggling, or the opposition is better than you, Sancho can make the difference in one move. He can dribble past three people, cross, shoot, whatever, and that kind of game winner, that Greenwood might become, and we saw in the first goal, he takes on two players, scored a great goal on his own. Problem, I think Sancho will give you a lot of consistency in that style. It's like, wow. If you add Sancho to that team, I think, and then strengthen, I still think, at the back, you look very strong.
Enough to narrow the gap with Liverpool and City? I mean, it would take more than Sancho, right?
Yeah.
You agree? It would take a centre-back, because I like Maguire as a person, but from what I can tell. But, you know, it's not as if he's Beckenbauer. And whoever plays alongside him, I don't think is going to be on a level of the very top people. And I don't know that Solskjaer, you know, Solskjaer is not and will probably never be a guru-type manager. You know, he doesn't mean he can't be successful with the right structure around him. And obviously, I think the left-back position needs to be addressed. And I also wonder, going forward, if Wan-Bissaka at right back becomes a problem. Because he's a central defender playing right back, right?
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if then maybe longer term, you don't think, as you suggested earlier, maybe a back three?
Yeah, maybe.
Or...
But then the same issue is there, who do you play a right wing back?
Yeah.
Do you play Wan-Bissaka? You know, again, but maybe...
Maybe they could have signed Hakimi. There you go.
Yeah.
That would have been your answer.
Yeah. But I just think compared
Hakimi
to where they were,
right back, Chilwell at left back, a back three of Wan-Bissaka, Koulibaly, and Maguire, right?
Yeah.
Pogba, Matic, Bruno can play on the wing, I guess. Or no, 3-4-1-2, Bruno in the hole. And then Rashford, but there's no room for Sancho then. It's tough, man.
It's tough, but then you have so many options, and then that's the versatility that you were looking for. But just to finish, if you look where they were 18 months ago, and we've said and we've been very critical of Ed Woodward, and I don't think Ed Woodward should take any credit for where they are now at all, but they look in a much better shape. It's far more, you could be far more optimistic about them, you know, even with Solskjaer as manager, who we've criticised a lot as well, than they were 18 months ago.
Yeah, amazing what Rashford and Pogba, your two best players, being fit.
And Bruno Fernandes as well.
And Bruno Fernandes coming in. Amazing how that turns things around.
Yeah.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the Did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, Jules, I promised and I deliver. It's Jan Agafjordtoft joining us because on Saturday, it's the final of the Cup in Germany. Bayer Leverkusen, my boy Peter Boss, yep, against Bayern Munich. Jan, so on paper, Bayer Leverkusen beat Bayern earlier this season, right? And yeah, so, in fact, when they played them again towards the end, we thought we might have a title race. I thought, oh, look. And then
they got battered.
And then they got battered. Is it going to be different in a one-off game?
Well, let's hope so. I mean, for all of us that love German football, is sometimes this domination of Bayern Munich is massive, of course. A couple of years ago, my club, Eintracht Frankfurt, played Bayern Munich. And I remember I did a lot of interviews for German papers, and I tried jokingly to say it's important for Eintracht Frankfurt not to underestimate Bayern Munich because they are better than we think and so on. And then they're ending up winning them. And I think what we can see in the Cup is not only a cliche, but for one game only, they will have a chance. But having said that, I mean, unbelievably impressed with what Bayern Munich have been doing lately. The way they're building the team at the moment is so unbelievable, but still, I think Leverkusen will play on that. One game, like you said, they've beaten them before, and they can have a chance. The problem with Leverkusen is, of course, that tradition of I can be the first one who say Leverkusen that they will never again with the Champions League this year. Of course, Leverkusen miss out. I mean, and this culture they have to break. And what is a better thing to break in a DFB Pokalfinale.
If you were Peter Bosch, and obviously you're not, and you're more handsome and you've got more hair, but how would you approach that game, that final? Would you play on the counter? Would you try to have a lot of the ball and put them under pressure and press high? Do you play Kai Havertz? Do you play Kevin Volland and Havertz behind it? I don't know. What would you do?
And sorry, and bear in mind, Jan, whatever you say will no doubt be more sensible than what Peter Bosch will do. And
yeah,
he'll probably do the opposite of anything you suggest.
Yeah. Now, I think for a game like this is all about that mental part as well. Okay, the strategy is, of course, how he sets up his team is very, very important. But I think that it's important to tell his players that this is the easiest game you will have all season, because Bayern Munich will be the big favorites. If Bayern Munich will win 3-0, everybody will say, well, that was as planned. So there shouldn't be any pressure on Leverkusen. I can only speak for myself. I only feel I played for a national team in the 90s, and we were always the guy that we were never favorites playing into games. And some games when we lost and we didn't try, that we were too cautious, we were too careful. Then I had a feeling afterwards, yeah, it's okay to lose, but we didn't give it all. So as a part of putting players in, yes, I would put Follen in, yes, I would put Kai Havertz up there, and so on and so on. So I think if they're going to be trying to be cautious and careful with Bayern Munich, they will lose anyway. So why don't you just go for it and see? And then afterwards you will say, yeah, we went for it, we lost, fair enough, and okay, it's a new season coming on. I'm afraid that if Leverkusen go out and go very, very deep, at some time Müller will do something funny and assist, and Lewandowski will get a goal anyway. So why don't you just try it?
Let's talk about the guy who is probably, outside of Dortmund and Bavaria, the most exciting player in the Bundesliga, Kai Havertz. He missed their match in the league. And in fact, I think he missed both games in the league this season. No conspiracy there. Inevitably, like every talented young German, he's being linked to to Bayern. In some ways, it's set up for a Disney ending where he single-handedly destroys Bayern, or even just beats Bayern, carries Peter Boss to victory, and then announces, "Oh yes, I'm joining the evil empire."
Yes, but you remember some many years ago there was a guy called Lothar Matthäus who were leaving Borussia Mönchengladbach, and there was a decisive penalty shooter was Lothar Matthäus. He missed that penalty, and then he went to Bayern Munich. So it's not always Disney ending on that, but. I agree with you. This is always cup finals. This is time for heroes, and what would be better than that? And do I think Bayern could end up getting Kai Havertz? I think they could. I mean, the way they're doing, I've been very critical to Bayern Munich. There were times that I think they didn't go anywhere. They were taking players on loan, selling them in as like big superstars, and at the end of the day, there were people who don't even got into the squad of Real Madrid, like Rodriguez or continue coming, sold in as in Messi in German football. But the way Bayern Munich is doing it now, I think it's so impressive. And after Leroy Sané, yes, they could get Kai Havertz. But let's hope we take them down, as Niko Kovac did as a coach for Eintracht Frankfurt when he was there and later joining them. So that would be a fantastic ending.
Yeah, and like all Frankfurt fans and people who dislike Bayern, what did you do that was brilliant? You sent agent Niko Kovac over to Bayern to go and screw up the club.
To destroy them.
So that was brilliant. Give us somebody for Leverkusen. Obviously, you know, this match is on our air and on ESPN. Casual fans will know Kai Havertz. Give me one other Leverkusen player who you think could be decisive in this game that people might be less familiar with.
Well, you will always know about the Bender twins. You never know who is who, and one of them is always injured anyway, so it's easy. Bailey could be a Jamaican, isn't he? A Jamaican,
yeah. Yes.
He's been linked to Manchester City. He's one of them who can take people on. Maybe that is a weakness of Bayern Munich, that you need players to take them on. But,
And then Leon Bailey versus Alphonso Davies in a foot race. Who wins that?
Oh, that's a tight one. That's a tight one. But I think Pavard could be the only really weakest link you could think of, I think, in that Bayern team. And I think if someone Bailey or Moussa Diaby, play on that side, so on Bayern's left side and Bayern's right side, and take on Pavard, I think maybe that's where there could be an opening.
All right, let's talk about the Bayern's big signing to wrap this up. I mean, big signing. We knew this was coming.
Yeah, Kwasi? You mean Kwasi from PSG, the young prodigy?
Of course, the young. The new Mikkel Cuisance, no?
I'm just taught. But.
Leroy Sané, he's had his injuries. He's had weird things. Like, remember when he missed out on the World Cup, for example, at the last second? And what is the thinking with Bayern? Do Bayern... I'm assuming they've done their homework and they say, you can go back. He's still very young. His physical issues aren't there. There's no mental issues. He can be the player he was, and maybe he'll put pressure on Gnabry and Coleman and create more competition on the wings. Is that the thinking? Do you like this deal?
First of all, I like this deal. I like Leroy Sané. I was there at the Charity Shield, I still call it Charity Shield, when he got injured, and I felt very sorry for him. At that time, he was very linked to Bayern Munich as well. But I think what Bayern is doing at the moment is that, you know, a lot of these big clubs, it's an issue. Where do you get your players? Where is your natural market? And Bayern, okay, Bayern, they will define their market that they can't get the biggest stars. I mean, they will probably go to England, or they will go to Juventus or Barcelona or Real Madrid, as I'm talking about now, the biggest stars. But what Bayern need to be good at, and they've been very successful with that over generations, is that they take the best German players. And I think that the best German players, there's got to be a feeling that there's a natural way for they to go to Bayern, which is hard for English fans to understand, because you will never see a Manchester United player going to Liverpool or vice versa. But in Germany, that is more normal, yeah? And so I like this way of then you can say for German football clubs, that it's not good for them, because then Bayern Munich will keep on winning the league. Okay, but we can't make Bayern Munich weaker. We need to make the other team stronger. So I don't think you can criticize Bayern to try to get the best players. And I think that's what they're doing now. They're seeing we have to get Nübel. I mean, there is a lot of talk about him and Neuer will play forever. But still, it's the right move. They need to have the next great German goalkeeper. And at the moment, now they think that's Nübel. And then they have to go for Leroy Sané. They have to go for Kai Havertz. And they had to be in the market for Timo Werner, although Salihamidžić has said at the time now that is not a player for us, but Flick wanted to at least be in the market for him. So I like this way of strategy. You have other teams like Manchester United, or you have the other teams. Where do they pick their players? Will they pick them from Swansea? Or will they get the youngest superstar, the striker, Haaland, you know, that they missed out on? So I think what Bayern have got a philosophy now, and these players are the consequences of that philosophy.
But, all right, Jules, I want to get your take on this too. I understand where Jan's coming from. I like the Sané deal. It just feels like it's a lot of money given his contractual situation and given the fact that he's hardly played football for 2 years. I'm just wondering whether they could have negotiated it down given that he obviously wanted to come.
I think 50 million for a talent like him is still quite cheap. If he doesn't have 1 year left on his contract, let's say he's got 3 years left.
It would be more, yeah.
Yeah, it'd be far more than that.
But I think it's a
bit like Werner. I know, but it's a bit like Werner. I think they got him at a really good price. I don't think the injury and the fact that he hadn't played much for the last 18 months is an issue. I saw him. I mean, he was only on the bench warming up against Chelsea. He looked very happy. I think the talent is there. I think coming home would probably actually benefit him more than anything else, and maybe the little attitude issues that we've had, and Guardiola at times have been really tough with him and dropped him from the squad, etc., might disappear in a more German environment kind of thing. And I don't know, for me, I can't see this one going wrong at all.
Yeah, and Dr. Lawrence has given his verdict, having examined Leroy Sané from 20 meters away.
I was quite close. Quite close. You know, it was only me in the stadium, pretty much. So.
But I want to get your view on it, because it is post-pandemic. Cities still have, of course, the Court of Arbitration for Sport appeal hanging over them. They could be in a much tougher financial position. He didn't want to go anywhere else. Could they not have strung this out a little longer and gotten a better deal, or am I just purely nitpicking and being pedantic?
Well, you know, I got a lot of respect for Germans, and I know that they will try to make a good deal out of it. I mean, of all useless football leaders doing the calculations of players, I think I will put Bayern up front doing that. But I agree. I still 1 year left of his contract, but this is a player who will be there forever. He can stay there for 5, 6, 7 years. He's a personality. I think he fits the bill big time for Bayern. I think this was being priority number one all the time. I think Kai Havertz would be a number two, because Kai Havertz is a different player from the rest of them, because he's that kind of Ballack kind of type. There's not many of them around. So I think this guy fits the bill. It fits the bill of the new Bayern Munich.
Jan, thank you so much.
Thanks, Jan.
Pleasure as always, boys.
So you think it's maybe too much money, or you're not sure about his fitness or form?
Look, if he's the guy from 2 years ago, it's a steal, right? But I just think they had a lot of leverage in this situation, mm-hmm. because of City's condition, because of the pandemic. And, you know, they'd obviously been talking to him and his people for a very, very long time. So, you know, sometimes it makes sense to get your business done early. Sometimes it makes sense to wait and push the envelope. If they wait another couple of weeks and City get banned from Europe, all of a sudden City have a cash flow issue, right? And he is a saleable asset. You know, they want to raise money. You know, that maybe they could have made a better deal. On the other hand, I have to say, like, you know, Kai Havertz is going to cost a ton of money if they go for him. But equally, Coutinho and his enormous wages and the enormous loan fee. I mean, I think in the end, between loan fee and wages, he's costing them something like 20 million.
Yeah.
That's going to be gone, presumably. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can fit you can maybe even fit Havertz and Sané to some degree, you know, in that slot. So it's an interesting one.
Yeah.
Then again, do you need to be in a rush to sign Kai Havertz when, you know, you'll probably still be around a year from now, right?
Yeah, and cheaper probably.
And possibly cheaper. Yeah. So we'll see. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart?
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes!
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
All right, enough Bayern, enough Dave Bay Pokal. Let's go for some quick hits.
Let's go, Gab.
Barcelona drop another 2 points in a match defined by VAR, Carrasco, and Griezmann. Jules, take it away.
Well, I'll try to sum it all up and sum up what, you know, what my thoughts are, especially on Griezmann. But first on the game, I was disappointed by Barcelona again. I don't know what you
really
thought.
Really? Yeah. Didn't think so.
I don't know. I like Ricky Puch, and for me, he was the only positive in that game, but Suarez was pointless. I mean, Rakitic again. I know he scored the other day, and you got, you know, you got back at me, all you listeners and stuff, but I just don't get it. I don't get how Rakitic still starts for that team. I'm not sure about the formation.
You didn't like the diamond?
I just think the diamond works if Suarez or whoever plays as a number nine with Messi up front has a good game. Otherwise, it's pointless.
Or even just runs into wide areas.
Otherwise, it's pointless. I thought they hardly created anything. For most of the time, it was static possession. No movement, nothing, not much width coming from fullbacks. I was disappointed. Yes, VAR played a big part. I thought the first penalty on Carrasco, there was contact there from Vidal. You know, I thought that was no problem. The one on Semedo, I thought, was really, really soft.
Soft, yeah.
And the third one, I thought, was really soft as well. So, I don't know. Again, we should not talk too much about VAR for a game like this. But here we are. Carrasco showing why on earth he went to China at 26 is beyond me. Because
he made a lot of money. He made a lot of money. But it's funny because we kind of forgot about him. And I'm like, hey, look, when he's there, dude, potentially, in the right game, is a game changer.
Yeah, big time. I mean, the movement and the boldness of taking on people and everything. I just think he's a wonderful player when he's in that kind of form. And I thought, you know what? I thought Atleti played, had the best performance. They played better. They created the more chances. They had the movement, I thought, was better. The patterns of play were better. There was a lot of things that I liked in their game. And I thought the draw in the end was probably a fair result. And then we can come on Griezmann.
Okay, Griezmann. So he comes on in the 90th minute.
Which is a humiliation, right?
On the show last night.
It's a humiliation.
That a lot of people view it that way.
I was screaming on my screen. I was screaming on the television. Why? Why don't you bring him on earth?
To help protect the draw in the 90th minute. I don't know.
God.
He said it's because they were playing well, and then he apologized to Griezmann too, which was weird from Setien.
So first he said, I'm not going to apologize. And then the most disturbing for me said, like, oh, if you bring him on, you're going to destabilize the team. What? Hang on. What? Did I hear that right? Griezmann.
So why did you bring him on?
But Griezmann coming on, destabilize your team. How? When? In which way? I don't get it. How does he destabilize anything?
I mean, I'm guessing he felt that... Look, Griezmann hasn't been the player that he was, right? We all agree.
Yeah,
that, right?
Because he doesn't play in his position most.
That's right. And you kind of knew that before, but we've also have seen Griezmann play as a winger before, early in his career, before
Atletico Madrid, time ago,
right?
Yeah.
So I think he's tried to adapt to that. It hasn't. It's not quite working out. What I don't understand, especially going to go diamond, and especially since Messi's going to do what Messi does, would you not consider? And I know it's maybe anathema to the team of 4-3-3, but why not play Suarez and Griezmann up front and play Messi?
Thank you.
Play Messi in the hole.
Exactly.
A special kind of hole in the sense, like, Leo, do whatever the hell you want. You two guys adjust to what he does. So there's always a reference point in the middle. And the Griezmann can float around him a little more like
100%.
He did. I mean, doesn't that seem more rational?
100%. And then you can still play Ricky Puig in the midfield three behind those three. Instead of Rakitic, thank you very much as well. So you can get rid of Rakitic and play Ricky Puig. Then Puig will have a similar impact on the game. I just don't get. Okay, you sign Griezmann for a lot of money. He's on enormous wages. I think he's on 17 or 18 million net a year. Okay, why are you not trying to make it work? You know that, and we saw the game against Atletico that when you don't play without him, you don't play better. So it's not like you bench Griezmann and suddenly your team is much better. That's not true. Okay? So you know that if you get a Griezmann at a very good level, your team will benefit from it, right? You with me on that?
Of course.
So why are you not trying? Like you said, try to play in a different way, because if you play 4-3-3 and you play him out on the left, you're not going to get anything from him. So maybe try to do something a bit different where you could get the most of him. He scored 14 goals this season in all competitions, right? How many of them have come from a Messi pass?
You tell me.
Three. Three out of 14. And how did Messi score on a Griezmann pass? Messi scored, what, 25 in all competitions or something? Two.
Yeah.
And don't tell me that those two players cannot combine more to be decisive.
Of course.
So come on. And again, just to finish on this, don't get me started on, oh yeah, but Messi doesn't like Griezmann. This is not true. Messi's wife and Griezmann's wife are best friends. Messi invited him at his birthday last week. They go on breakfast together and all of this. Yeah. But so it's not even like, oh, but Messi didn't want him at the club and him and Suarez don't like him. This is not true. This is not true. It's just about finding the right chemistry on the pitch, finding a way of all of them, Suarez, Messi and Griezmann, being able to play all together. And Setien should be able to do that. And like Griezmann's dad said yesterday on social media, which he shouldn't have, and you should not criticize if you're a brother or a father, a wife, I don't know, whatever.
People are going to think you're having a go at the Ronaldo family.
But he said, in a way, he also said a very fair point. It was like, Setien doesn't have the key to this team. It's not him. There's nothing that Setien does in that team, in that dressing room. And I think the one that can make things better on the pitch still is Messi. And if Messi wants things to be better, I think he can make them better. That's me. That's my rant over. But let's stay on that game, Gab, because in that game, Messi also scores on a cheeky Panenka, his 700th goal for Barcelona and of his, in his career. Okay. Pretty incredible, right?
Yeah. But before the Cristiano fanboys get upset, Cristiano Ronaldo does have more goals.
In more games, though.
Stop it.
No, I'm just saying, in more games, it's true.
I think our social media account put out like some stat that said, like, you know, if you'd made your debut for Barcelona at 18 and scored 40 goals a season every single year, you'd still have, for the next 15 years, you'd still have fewer goals than Lionel Messi, which is just, I mean, like, it's just absurd, right? I saw a list, and this is where it gets fuzzy because it's different eras and stuff. The list I saw, and look, statistics, whatever. But Messi, right now, based on this list, is number 7 all-time.
Yeah.
And Cristiano's number 6. Messi, 700 goals, Cristiano, 728. Working backwards, you've got the legendary Gerd Müller for Bayern Munich and Germany, 735. I think it's safe to say they'll both be passing him. Maybe Cristiano might even pass him this season.
Yeah.
Ferenc Puskas, 746 goals. Pelé, 767. Romário, 772. Both these guys, I think, within range for Messi and Cristiano.
Yeah.
And then the guy who's top is a guy who's, you know, maybe not that many people are familiar with, but it's Josef Bichan, who played in Czechoslovakia and Austria before the war. I didn't say, like, I wasn't around back then, normal. I don't know much about him. We're living in remarkable, remarkable times. I've said it before, but it's worth mentioning again. This is just some unbelievable stuff.
And you wrote two fascinating pieces on Cristiano and Messi's development or evolution, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
And we talked
really
a bit about... Yeah, no, they were amazing, I have to say. I don't know how long you spent on them, but they were fantastic. But just on Messi, because we're talking about Messi now, how much his game has and his goals have evolved since in the last few years or...
Well, actually, the most remarkable thing about Messi, I mean, his goal scoring has remained constant. And there were situations where... Because I wrote that piece with a lot of support from analytics and data from StatsBomb and Opta. What you notice is his goals have generally remained constant. They became a little more... The team became a little more Messi-dependent under Tata Martino, for example. But what's really remarkable about Messi is that every single year that he's been in La Liga... He's either been first or second in terms of successful dribbles and attempted dribbles. And that's crazy. When you're 33 years old and you're still beating people so regularly, you're so consistent.
So easily.
I mean, his game hasn't evolved in something where, you know, I'll only dribble once in a while. Or, I mean, I don't know what's up with his legs, but that was to me something I was not expecting. Arsenal beat up Norwich, as expected. Wow. Matteo Guendouzi and Mesut Ozil are still on the naughty step for different reasons.
Naughty corner.
But Bukayo Saka signs a new deal.
Yeah.
And if you want to celebrate because you hate French football, Saliba won't be playing in the French Cup final.
Just please, can you read the word you wrote first in the script? Go on.
The Arsenal Grinches deny Saliba chance of playing in a Cup final.
Okay. William Saliba is an Arsenal player. When they bought him last summer, they paid a fee to Saint-Etienne. And as many clubs do, and in transfers, you put add-ons and clauses in the contract, including when you loan out a player to the seller club, where if he plays a certain amount of game, you pay a bit more extra money. It's an incentive for the club you've just bought the guy from to play him. Otherwise, Saint-Etienne could have kept the 30 million and never play him for the whole season because it was not theirs anymore. Okay, so it's an incentive. There's nothing wrong in that. The clause said if he starts 17 matches in all competition, we pay you another €2.5 million, right? For different reasons, one being the pandemic, one being his injuries, and the other one being some sort of rotation by Claude Puel and the manager before. Right now, Saliba is on 16 starts, which means that at the end of his contract, his loan contract with Saint-Etienne, which has expired on June the 30th, he's been on 16 starts with Saint-Etienne, right? So Arsenal right now don't have to pay any more money. Saint-Etienne now is saying, oh, we have the French Cup final against PSG on July the 24th. Could we have Saliba back for that? And we want to play him. So Arsenal say, yeah, no problem. Let's renegotiate a deal, a loan extension if you want. You know, what can we do? And Saint-Etienne are saying, well, we can do what we agreed last summer, which is that, you know, if he starts, they're making 17 starts, so you'd have to pay the money. And Arsenal said, like, hang on a minute. So we can loan him back to you for one game, which cost us €2.5 million, and also there's a risk that he can be injured in a game like every other player. So Arsenal are like, hang on a minute, that's not right. This is not fair. But you don't seem to agree. I think it's absolutely fair from Arsenal.
Listen. I just wonder, the way you say it, it all makes sense to me. I wonder if there's another version of the story from Saint-Etienne, because otherwise, this is just the cheekiest.
Everything. They lost the money and the player.
This is just the cheekiest thing in the world.
Arsenal just said, you can have Saliba back, and yes, they wanted him to come a bit to the training ground at Colney, just because he came back from a long injury, to assess him, he would have trained a bit there, and then gone back. But Arsenal just said, you can have him, and you can start him in the cup final, but we won't pay you the €2.5 million extra. And Saint-Etienne said, no.
All right, that's right.
That's where we are. Okay, and by the way, that might still be resolved somehow, and I think he might still play at some point.
You would hope so.
Yeah.
Saka's contract is obviously big. That's one less thing to worry about. Ozil, we don't need to talk about because we know whatever. You know, we know what's up with there. I have my own thoughts on this, as you know. Guendouzi, I thought they'd made up.
Arteta said last night after the game, for him to come back into the team, things would have to change, and they haven't changed yet.
What is the change? What does he have to do?
I don't know, maybe say sorry, maybe change his attitude, his behavior, training. I don't know. But there's clearly something. Three games in a row, dropped from the squad from a player that you started against City and right. against Brighton in your first two games. It's very strange, but he's making an example of it, Arteta, whether you know we agree or not. Maybe that's the way. I just think that you have to be very careful the way you treat players. You can't treat Mesut Ozil like if he was an 18-year-old. And again, you have to deal with the players knowing the personality, because you could get backlash. Depending on how you treat people, you could get backlash and you could lose a player. So
I mean, and the other big difference in Mesut Ozil is obviously a liability. Not a liability. He's a cost to the club
yeah.
because of his expiring contract and his enormous contract and whatever. Whereas Guendouzi is supposedly an asset in the sense that if you don't want him anymore, you can sell him and get some money back.
Yeah. Chelsea lose away to West Ham on Wednesday night amidst all sort of VAR controversy again. But ultimately, was it a fair result, Gab? And again, they didn't really play well. Again, like we saw in the FA Cup in the first half against Leicester.
I thought it was a fair result. I thought West Ham deserved to win this game. The VAR controversy, some of this is just stupid. Like the disallowed goal. The guy's like, I don't know why it took so long. The guy's on the ground,
yeah.
you know. Apart from the fact that he's clearly offside and he's yeah. interfering with Azpilicueta, people are like, you know, then they cut to the David Moyes shaking his head on the bench. I'm like, dude, I'm sorry, but watch the freaking replay.
And I know, he's just there, like laying obvious. On the floor.
But no, I think it's a reminder that, you know, Chelsea need to get their stuff together. And by the way, Pulisic, the penalty he won.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be happy with that if I'm... Did it look... I mean, it might have been contact, but...
I know.
Hey, dude, this whole accentuating the fall.
Yeah.
Either learn how to do that properly, incredibly, or don't do it.
It looked very right? unnatural. Yeah.
It looked extremely unnatural. That's not going to help you, even if you were legitimately fouled.
You're avoiding talking about the defending, though, Chelsea defending. But Rudiger and Christensen, I mean, you and I are big Christensen fans, and
could
I love
possibly
it.
Have known that Yarmolenko was a one-footed player and he was going mean, to bring
on.
The ball to his left? How could you possibly expect?
I could not believe it.
But I love Rudiger. That was a major, major brain fart on his part. Put it that way.
Is there a case of not starting him the next game?
No, there's no case. Rudiger is, I think, Chelsea's
okay,
best.
Okay, Tomori and Zuma, no. It's still a no for you.
I think Tomori's not fit. And come on, Zuma, come on.
That's just
realistic.
Okay.
Juventus beat up Genoa 3-1 and serve up three of the best goals you'll see all season. Imagine that. Juventus
yeah.
winning and entertaining us.
Yeah.
Jules, your favorite.
Wow, so... If you haven't seen them, Dybala, the first one, amazing first touch, turn, beat two players, and then shoots. Okay, the keeper could have done a little bit better. It's a bit on the keeper, not really in the bottom corner. But then Cristiano has a thunder strike from 25 yards in the top corner. Wonderful. And then Douglas Costa, little step over on the edge of the box, and then curls it with his left foot, literally cleaning the top corner. It's really hard to pick. I would go, I think, for Dybala. I'm a big Dybala fan, as you know, but just I think the first touch and the turn in a very crowded small space, I think is unbelievable. And again, it shows that he can unlock games like that, which not many players can. What about you?
I'm totally torn. I when you asked me before, I said Cristiano because just of the way leather did, and it's such a special occasion when he scores on a long
True.
Range shot.
Small rare discovered.
But Dybala's turn was special.
Meanwhile, Gab, Lazio keep pace, beating Torino 2-1, coming from behind once again. But they will be without strikers this weekend against Milan. Could that
be? Felipe Caicedo and Ciro Immobile both out. And I think this is going to be a big hurdle.
Yeah.
Interesting to see whether they have a kid who's, I think, has only made a couple appearances, who could be starting up front. Otherwise,
did you play Luis Alberto as a false nine or someone as a false nine? What do you do?
I think I would personally play Milinkovic-Savic further up the pitch, pay him as a false nine.
Yeah.
Because at least he's got the side.
Yeah,
you've got to give up.
Yeah.
Your only counterattacker is going to be Correa, realistically.
Yeah.
But another test of Simone Inzaghi's ability to manage.
Yeah.
Jurgen Klopp says Liverpool won't defend the title next year. They'll be attacking the next one. It's just what you'd expect him to say, right? He's always in character because guess what? This is who he is.
Yeah, this is. You could not make it more of a Klopp sentence than that. This is brilliant. And yeah, like you said, Gab, it's just him. This is what he is. And that's why they will probably keep winning. You know, they might not win the league or maybe not in the same domination way, but because he will make sure that his players are up for it, and he will repeat them that all summer probably. Let's attack it. Let's attack it. Let's go. Let's not be satisfied. Let's go for more. Let's go again, and this and that. And you could see him in your head. You could picture him saying that. It's just, yeah, he's just brilliant.
If he falls out of love in football, he's got a future in PR.
Yeah, definitely. Gab, you interviewed UEFA president Alexander Seferin. Is it true that he told you we might have fans in the Champions League final?
That's right. He said it before, but he said on July 9th they're going to decide based on what the situation is in Portugal, whether that's going to be possible. He said as of right now, it won't be possible.
Is he worried about the sort of like resurgence a bit of the virus there?
I think it's a health issue, right?
Yeah.
That's what's going to drive it. We don't know which way things are going. But the main reason they have a July 9th cutoff date is that the whole protocols for getting, you know, for getting the teams there, arranging the teams, and having them with fans or without fans makes a huge, huge difference. It's not like you can be like, oh, look, virus is gone. Okay, everybody rock up tomorrow.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're hopeful and they're flexible, and I found him in good form. Look for the piece. It comes out on Friday. He also talks about other stuff, which is why you should read the piece.
Yeah, definitely.
Inter vented all their fury on Brescia after their tough game against Parma, winning 6-0 with six different goal scorers, one of them named Ashley Young.
Yeah.
And they found out also that United will let them keep Alexis Sanchez on loan until the end of the Serie A season, which is important to them.
Yeah.
But United are saying, you can't keep him for the Europa League.
Why?
Well, I would hazard a guess it's because United are also in the Europa League, and then they don't want to face.
But then he doesn't play in that game. Why? So if Inter don't face United at all, you're preventing him from potentially winning a trophy and being a key part in the team that is paying his wages in a big European competition. This is crazy.
I don't have a problem with
that. I've got a big problem with that. You know, don't play against United like every loney does in England. And you don't play against your parent club.
Anyway,
it's a stupid rule, but okay, it's the rule. But let the poor guy play in the Europa League and potentially can win it.
Look, United, the deal ended June 30th. United could have him back now already if they wanted to.
Yeah,
right?
But he would not be able to play. So,
But whatever.
Yeah.
It's United's right to take advantage of the situation. They could, like I said, they could have done the same thing with Dean Henderson. I wouldn't have had a problem with it. I mean, that's the reality of the situation. It's your guy. I don't have an issue with it, but yeah, obviously Inter are rather annoyed.
Gab, you were praising Milan, and then they go and drop points away to Spal, and probably should have got beaten as well, but managed somehow to get a draw despite Ibrahimovic's return. What's going on? What happened?
Okay, so first of all, they didn't just drop points to Spal. Spal actually, who are fighting to avoid relegation, figured that they were probably going to lose this game, so they actually rested a number of regulars. That said, Spal go 2-0 up.
Yeah.
First of all, through a weirdo multiple deflection pinball goal. And then Sergio Floccari scoring a goal that's probably
How old is Floccari, by the way?
Floccari, 38 years
Amazing.
Old.
Amazing.
38 years old.
Wow.
You know what? It's a better goal than all three Juve goals put together.
Man,
that's how good it was.
It is.
Go check it out. Only goal of the season, by the way. So you're in these freak situations. But Milan fight back to 2-2. Ibra comes on. I disagree. I think Milan created more than enough chances to go and win this game. And on a different day, we would have been praising Milan's fight back. I don't think this is a problem. And I think they're actually in pretty good shape heading into the Lazio game. The Guardian reports that newly promoted clubs to the Premier League will have to pay £8 million each this coming season and next season to help offset the costs of the coronavirus pandemic. Does that seem fair to you, Jules?
Yeah, I think it is. It is, Gab. I think it's not that they will have to pay, but probably that money will be taken out of the money that they will get by being promoted, which is far more than what they would earn in the Championship. So I think it's fair that you pay a bit of your part by being promoted to what then the Premier League, you know, loss of earnings and all the things that the coronavirus has cost them. I think that's fair. You agree?
Yeah, they've had to take a rebate in their TV money, and they took the rebate. They took the hit this year. And ultimately, you know what? It's the Premier League. They're joining the Premier League. Premier League clubs can do whatever the hell they want, you know?
Because you would expect the team that they will join in the Premier League, those teams as well would have.
Yeah, the argument is they're coming into a TV contract that was negotiated when they weren't there, right?
Yeah.
So they're benefiting from it for something that they haven't yet contributed to, is essentially the argument.
The Premier League will wear the Black Lives Matter badges for the rest of the season on the players' shirt, but some ex-players turned analyst like Gary Neville or Patrice Evra have said that they will no longer wear them. They've got the little badge on their shirt or their top or whatever. What's going on? And let's not even talk about Matt Letizia, because that was a shambles as well.
Yeah, Matt Letizia having an issue with some of the politics, or what he considers to be some of the politics behind Black Lives Matter. I mean, look, I don't want to get too granular and nuts and bolts on this, but this is an issue that will arise when you, as a league, you know, I know it was the team captain's idea, decide, okay, everybody's going to wear this, right? So then you stand out if you don't wear it, if you don't, you're not given a choice. And also when the movement itself ends up meaning different things to different people, because they can go in different directions. I mean, from what I read, it seemed that Neville and Evra were told to wear it.
Yeah.
Now, the minute you're told to do something, it loses meaning.
That's wrong, definitely.
And then it becomes a story when they don't wear it. Yeah. And then they have to go explain themselves and explain, oh, well, I agree with this bit, not with that bit. This is the problem with, and this is why I said from day one, you know, you support the movement as an individual. Yeah. The minute institutions and the minute it goes corporate in this way, where everybody... I mean, not corporate in terms of a corporation having a message, but corporate in terms of a corporation compelling its employees to go and support it, then you've opened up a gigantic can of worms. Yeah. Jules, you are our technical expert. Is all this stuff about Nike's new ball just a load of marketing nonsense?
We see. I haven't got the ball yet. We asked Nike to send us one, and they said that they didn't have any more to send out to people like us, so we'll have to wait and maybe buy it to see. But it's obviously a new texture, sort of a new design, new ball inspired by golf balls. So you've got
little dimples,
exactly, to apparently so the ball can fly in a better, like, you know, can go in the air in a better way and no dodgy movement that sometimes you see a bit like a beach ball. So we'll have to see. I just like innovation. If it works, great. If it doesn't, you can always go back to old shape and old forms and stuff like that. But we'll see. I wish I could have it here to do, you know, a bit of keepy uppies and to tell you what the feeling is. But maybe
I gotta say, we always have this for every World Cup when they introduce the, I don't know if it's Nike or their competitor that also makes balls, that introduces a new World Cup ball.
And yeah.
You always have the thing when people go and interview the goalkeepers, like, it flies too. I don't care. I mean, whatever differences are going to be absolutely minimal. This is all
maybe
just,
not. Maybe
we're
not.
Just generating
maybe
a whole bunch of publicity
know.
For this.
Maybe
well,
not.
No, because if it's true, if the differences are too great and it sucks, then they're not going to go with it, right?
Yeah.
I just feel like we're generating a whole bunch of publicity for Nike. Hey, which is fine. You know, well done them. They got good marketing people.
Well, finally, Gab, a bit of transfer news. Napoli are supposedly plotting to spend 100 million euros on Gabriel and Victor Osimhen from Lille, the Brazilian defender and the Nigerian striker. The agents and the players are in Naples as we speak. That's a lot of money in a pandemic era, right?
It's a ton of money. And
do they have it? Do they really have it?
Well, if they sell Koulibaly, yeah. I mean,
guess so.
But does this remind you of somebody, of maybe another Lille player of African descent?
Yeah.
And his agent stepping out of a helicopter at the training ground? I kind of feel like we've been here before with Pepe.
Yeah.
Of course. And this is a way of getting other people to come out. Look, I'm not dissing Napoli in any way, shape, or form whatsoever. It's a lot of money, but these are
great
very good players.
Yeah.
I mean, we've heard about Osimhen all year. Gabriel, good player.
Very good player. One of the best. Yeah, yeah. He's 22.
No, but exactly.
Chelsea and Everton as well are very keen on him. So
I just want it so public, and you kind of announce it. And I'll be curious to see. I don't know if the video's out there, but I'm sure video's out going to be out there of those guys.
Yeah, yeah.
Showing
we saw
up.
Them. Yeah, we saw them leaving the hotel.
It's
in
a
Naples
wonderful
and
way.
Kind of
put it this way: it's a wonderful way to do business.
Yeah.
but look, if De Laurentiis has pulled stuff like this off in the past, right? He signed Gonzalo Higuain from Real Madrid, for goodness sake.
Yeah,
why
yeah,
not
so
this?
Definitely.
All right, we done.
That's what
we're going to be back
today.
On Monday after a packed weekend.
Yeah, again.
I'm looking forward to it.
Me too, yeah.
Shall we invite our listeners to come back and join us?
Please do.
All right. Catch you on Monday.